Welcome to the Gulf Coast Life Book Club. I'm your host, Carrie Barber. Today we hear from Marie-Helene Bertino, author of the new novel, Beautyland. Beautyland is the story of young Adina, who lives with her single mother in Northeast Philadelphia. Adina is different. She was sent from another planet to take notes and let her superiors know whether Earth would be a suitable place for them to live. She communicates with them by fax machine. The novel is insightful, nuanced, and magical, and in the hands of Marie-Helene Bertino, it is truly an original piece of writing. I can't say enough good things about this novel. Marie, welcome to the Gulf Coast Life Book Club.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Thank you for having me and for that beautiful introduction. I loved that.
Good. Okay, so Adina is a singular character, but she's in the category of a visitor from elsewhere trying to make her home. Did that character come to you fully formed, or did it sort of, did you know you just wanted to have like a stranger come into town and it developed over time and drafts?
It did develop over time and drafts, exactly. It began as a short story where the character was left ambiguous, a story in my first collection. And I kept wanting to take notes on human beings. So I kept a folder on my desktop called Notes on Human Beings that grew and grew over several years. And then a character began to glimmer through those notes. And I started thinking, I wonder if there's a novel in this. But to write a novel, I would have to go so much more into the actual character and develop her and give her a location, a name, a family, a past, likes and dislikes. And so Adina Giorno, Beautyland's protagonist, came from many years of that thinking.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I was going to ask you that. How did you come up with her observations about life on Earth? That these are the things that she faxes to her home planet, and they are so, they're really funny, they're really heartbreaking, they're really dear. Like, some of them are, what time you eat dinner is a sign of class. Human beings don't like when other humans seem happy. Just very straightforward things that Adina notices on Earth. So did those all come from that folder on your desktop and you just have been collecting them?
That's right. The transmissions came first, believe it or not.
Uh-huh.
And were honestly directly out of my own attempts to understand human society.
Yes.
And the strange rituals and circumstances that we all find ourselves in. So like you said, they're really simple and direct, but I feel like when you document the familiar directly and matter-of-factly, they can take on this very, very strange, uncanny thing that happens when you kind of disorient yourself from things that you do every day. And that was the real fun of the project of Beautyland. But yes, the transmissions came first, and Adina and all of her pals, so to speak, came second.
And they're profound. I mean, that thing about the what time you eat dinner is a sign of class. When I read that line in the book, I was like, yes. You know, it's so simple, and I never really thought about it before, but it's so, it's just, I don't know, it's one of the really beautiful things about this book.
Oh, thank you. And that's interesting because that was one that was so, that I, how do I say this? That was one that's so present in my life that I almost didn't include it because it seemed so obvious, funny enough. Because my ancestors were carpenters and ornamental woodworkers, and they would have dinner very early. And then, you know, I came to New York and met people who were more affluent, and it seemed as if the more affluent you were, the later you would have dinner. And that was that was a surprise to me. I had to learn those things. But I think that it's the kind of thing that you know so inherently that you forget or to even be aware of.
Yes, or you have to be plunked into another society before you even notice that you do it one way and they do it another way.
Exactly, which is why when someone visits your land, so to speak, if someone
Yes.
comes to see you and visits New York or America and they point these things out to you, you think, oh my God, I never even thought twice about that. Which is why Adina, who is literally extra to the terrain and extraterrestrial, or she believes that she is at least, why she is in such a perfect location to see humans in their full, strange, weird, interesting, joyful forms. You know, she's like the writer and the reporter's point of view, a little at a distance so as to see the whole entire shape.
Yes. And it's funny that you said humans in all their weirdness because she comes across as like a kind of a quirky character. Yet you write about her so lovingly. I was really struck by that. I don't know if you can talk a little bit about that. Like, how were you able to have such a light touch with her? She's so lovable, but you might look at her and just think she's kind of strange.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. That means it worked. All of my work was obviously was successful. I guess you could see her as strange, and certainly, you know, readers of my work in general do tend to think that it is also a bit on the odd side, but I don't think that she is strange, and maybe that's why I have a light touch with her because I do love her. I deliberately put in foibles and flaws and mistakes and humor and things that would make her distinct and clear and unique and original. I mean, those are just things that are interesting to me as a person and a writer. But I don't know. I find her to be no pun intended, I find her to be very deeply human.
Yes. I shouldn't have said strange. I mean, she stands. I don't know. I just feel like so often the pressure is to conform and the pressure is to be like others, and she doesn't fall for that, which I loved. I mean, I loved her too. I just couldn't get enough of her. It's just a great character. She's a
Thank
great
you.
character.
Thank you.
Okay, so she grew up in Northeast Philadelphia, which again, you write about that neighborhood too with such tenderness. Can you talk a little bit about why did you want to set it there, and did you have any trouble writing about setting it there, or how did that go?
It's true. It is an interesting place to set Beautyland. I grew up there. I was born and raised in Northeast Philadelphia, and it was a difficult place to see the charm in, I would say, as I was growing up. And going along the theme of this conversation, I maybe wasn't able to see it clearly until I moved away from it, which is kind of a life theme for me. I'm not able to write about something until some time has passed or there's literal distance. So I moved only 2 hours up the turnpike to New York City, but that distance was large enough for me to look back to Philadelphia and see what I had maybe missed when I was going through it, or when I was living there, I should say. And one of those things is the magic that was present in my childhood that was flirting around the edges, but that I just couldn't see. And what unlocked that ability for me was actually working with a student at the New School where I was teaching, and who was writing these really beautiful female-centric short stories set in her hometown in Appalachia. And she confided in the class after her first workshop that she was really, really, really nervous to turn them in because she did not feel like Appalachia was, quote unquote, literary enough. It didn't deserve to be written about, so to speak. And I launched into this very impassioned monologue about how beautiful it was and how the stuff of literature is everywhere. And you know, there is no such thing as terrain that literature solely belongs to, etc. And then I went home and realized I had been doing the exact same thing with Northeast Philadelphia. I had never written about it. When I would think about writing about it, I would get a pit in my stomach because I couldn't think of how to match it to literature with a capital L. And when I realized I was scared to do it, I knew that I had to do it, because in my life, especially with writing, whenever I've experienced fear, that has given me my to-do list. And so I was like, okay, how can I take this place with strange strip malls and gas stations and auto worlds? How can I take that and connect it to the stars, the universe, and make it and make it special? And I, you know, and I teach this a lot, point of view and turning to your attention toward something charms it in a way. And the more deeply you can see it, the more special it becomes. This is not only a writing lesson, but it's kind of a life lesson. So I turned my attention to Northeast Philly, and I realized that the more in depth I described it, the more unique it seemed. And so I was able to, I hope, at least make it so well known on the page that you felt like it belonged in fiction. And so it's no accident that Adina lives across from an auto world, because it was kind of a joke I had with myself. Like, is there any way to connect auto world to the stars? And so I put her across from auto world. That was my assignment. And then there's a line in the book when she makes her last move that is literally, she's thinking of what she loves about her neighborhood, and she says auto world and the stars. And that comes directly from my work with my brilliant student, Allison Hess, who unlocked that for me.
Amazing. And she and her mother have lives, speaking of more on the Northeast Philly thing, like, their lives are not easy, but they are very loving and they seem to be having a lot of fun. Do you think her mother thinks of herself as an outsider too, or how can you talk just a little bit about, I love that relationship too, between her and her mother. They were sort of, it was sort of the two of them against the world a little bit.
It's a special, it can be a special relationship, the relationship between single mother and child, single mother and daughter in this case. And I really did. I did think of it as them against the world. And as soon as Adina is born, her grandparents cease contact with them, with her mother. And so it really is them on their little island or planet, as it were. And her mother is doing her best, but she's flawed. And I deliberately did not want her to be a perfect or angelic character. So I muddied her character up a little bit to make her real, but I also allowed her to be hopeful and surprising and to change in good ways throughout the novel. And that is a single mother character that I had never read, to be honest. So that it was important to me to have Therese, her mother, be real in all of those good ways.
She's another great character. Adina doesn't tell everyone that she's from another planet. She kind of withholds that to only her most trusted people. And it seems to almost be like a litmus test for her for intimacy, like who she feels safe telling that to. And it, of course, it changes as she gets older and becomes an adult and so forth. But can you talk a little bit about that, just how she negotiates that as she goes through her life?
I love that idea that it is a litmus test. I completely agree with that. So Adina has three instances in the book where she has what I consider to be coming out scenes, where she tells someone beloved in her life who she believes she really is. And she receives three distinct reactions. And in that way, that's just one of the ways I consider this book to be a deeply queer book, because it echoes the experience of coming out and authentic self and chosen family. And I was thinking of those things when I was writing those scenes. And, the plethora of reactions she gets, I think, really reflects what many people who are queer receive when they are brave enough to share their identities with their loved ones. And so one thing I've been loving about the reaction so far to Beautyland is when people talk about it as a book of differences and a book of differentness. And I think that that is the territory that Adina's character occupies, and that was important to me.
That's great. I'm not quite sure how to ask this, but it's the story is very dreamy, and I wonder if you can talk a little bit about like how did you put it together? Did your subconscious did you
Sure,
depend
take your
on
time. I know it's weird. I know it's hard.
Did you depend on your subconscious to help you construct the story as opposed to like your linear brain, your linear way of thinking?
I depended on both, and they work hand in hand to make the other possible. So one of the literal dreamy sections of the book is that when Adina is asleep, she is visited by teachers, let's say, from her home planet in what she considers to be the night classroom. So she's learning during the day in school, and then at night she has what she feels are lessons from her superiors. Those literal dreams, they're kind of dreams. Those literal dreams had to be written about directly and matter-of-factly with a lot of visceral description and active verbs so that they did feel real. I think it's hard to write dreams because dreams are so, well, one has to know the dreamer to understand what the dream means. So it can be hard to write dreams in fiction. They so often don't work. So to do so, I developed Adina first and then put her inside those dreams with a lot of her own reactions and opinions and the kind of details that I hoped would root the reader in a less dreamlike understanding.
Interesting. Adina mentions Carl Sagan a lot. She can you just tell people who may not have read it yet what is his role in the story? And she almost seems to maybe have a little bit of a crush on him. I don't know. She admires him, let's say. But yeah, can you just talk a little bit about Carl Sagan?
Absolutely. And I am by no means an expert on Carl Sagan. However, I too became very enamored by him while I was doing research for this book. Carl Sagan essentially was a polarizing and enigmatic astronomer who never stopped looking for extraterrestrials. And he was in charge of the Voyager 1 expeditions that famously had the golden records on them. And Voyager was launched the day Adina is born in 1977. So Voyager itself becomes a sibling to Adina, and it's tracked throughout the book alongside her own development. And Carl Sagan becomes a father figure. I don't know that I feel that she had a crush on him necessarily, Carrie. That's some Freudian stuff, maybe, perhaps, that even I am not aware of. So I don't rule it out. But to me, I considered him to be a father figure to her. And because she actually doesn't have a present father in the book. And so Carl Sagan takes that role. And one thing I, personally, one thing I really like personally about the relationship she has with him is that after he passes away, she says, "He never stopped looking for me." And considering Adina is someone who desperately longs for that companionship and her people and to be collected and for someone to come back and get her, that is tremendously powerful for her. So I see Carl, if I can call him that, I shouldn't. I see Carl Sagan, Mr. Sagan, as a father figure to our gentle extraterrestrial who is so far from home.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, those are really all my questions. Do you have anything else that you would like to add? Is there anything I am missing or that you'd like to talk about or you want to make sure people hear about the book?
I mean, I have things I want to say to you off the record just questions I have. But I mean, I don't think so. I think that, you know, Beautyland, Adina's namesake, maybe, is a friend of mine who I lost for 5 years ago. Mm. When my friend Adina Talvi Goodman, when she was 31, passed away from cancer. And the namesake, thank you. And she was lovely and influenced a lot of people while she was here on Earth. And, you know, I was wrestling with a lot of loss and frustration after we lost her. And Beautyland was something I wrote to kind of almost cast out a hope into the universe toward whatever is out there for that kind of connection after I lost my friend. And it's interesting because profound grief can sometimes make you really strong. After we lost her and a couple other people in my life, I was just like, what is the point of being scared to write certain things? Mm. And I had never really written about my childhood or Northeast Philadelphia, like I said. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what am I scared of? The worst has happened. One of my dearest and most beloved friends is gone. What am I scared of? And so I was emboldened to write this novel. And I think that, or rather I hope that it's evident that I was really trying to tell the truth, really trying to be as honest as I could about being a human and what it looks like to walk around and dare to be on the earth.
Yes, I think that's why this book is hitting so poignantly with me, with other, so many other readers I've talked to. I mean, it's such a beautiful book. And I think that's why I think you really hit the bullseye.
So I highly recommend getting super frustrated and sad and writing it down. See what happens.
That's your writing tip.
That's my writing tip. Yes. To all of your listeners.
Okay, well, Marie-Helene Bertino, thank you so much for joining us on the Gulf Coast Life Book Club.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Carrie.
That was Marie-Helene Bertino, author of the new novel, Beautyland. Buy the book from bookshop.org or order it from Books and Books in Miami. I'm your host, Carrie Barber, and we had production help today from Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.